We're in Mark chapter 15, starting at verse 1. Remember, we've just finished Peter's denial of the Lord. And now it's early in the morning. The chief priests with the elders and scribes and the whole council immediately held a meeting. And binding Jesus, they led him away and delivered him to Pilate. So they tried him. Again, during the late night and early during the morning in darkness, which again, they should not have done had they been obeying the law. And after they had done this, the chief priest and the council, they began to spit on him and mock him and hit him and let their officers do the same. Again, this was forbidden under the law. These were hypocrites. Who claim religious hypocrites are the ones who go to the greater hell, Jesus said. He said their greatest damnation is reserved for these kind of people who act like the devil and profess to be Christians. Your churches are full of them. When I say churches, I mean buildings. I don't mean the true church. Institutions, denominations. They're full of religious people. That pretend they're actors. That's what the word hypocrite comes from. They want people to believe their religion is a means to gain, a means to get attention. Anything, they use the church as a social club, anything to get attention. Can you imagine the hell that's waiting for these people who use God and tell people they represent God when they're called into judgment? Greater shall be their damnation. So they abuse God, they abuse the law, they abuse Jesus. They did this in sin and willfulness, yet they were blinded by the devil. The consequence of giving into sin is you're given over to lies. That's why many people will say, Lord, Lord. Believing Jesus as their Lord as they're sentenced to hell by him. That's why many carnal, lukewarm, backslidden, and worldly people who name the name of the Lord will end up in hell, thinking they're Christians. Because they will not abide in the truth. They will not continue in the grace and the faith. They will not finish the race. They will do not what the Lord requires of them to stay in the vine. And that will be the end for them also. So again, this is what they did, the wicked people. And then when they're finished, they deliver him to Pilate. Why? Because the Romans ruled all of this world. And these were all subjugated peoples. And they could not execute the death penalty on people without Rome's approval. Either Rome did it itself or they gave approval. So the religious leaders and so forth could not simply put anybody to death. They could try them. They could find them guilty. They could deal with the lesser crimes, beating, punishing, fining. But if it came to putting someone to death, they needed the Roman governor's permission or whoever represented Rome in their area before this could be done. So this is why they have found him guilty. They want him dead. They've been plotting his murder for quite a while. And so now it's a matter of taking him before Pilate. And again, you must realize the Jews as a whole and the priestly family, they really despise the Romans, but they have no choice. They're under their control. So if they want anything, they have to come and ask. And again, you have this political situation going on. The Roman governors usually didn't care much for the people they ruled either. Their main job was to answer to the higher-ups and ultimately to the Caesar and to keep in good with him. And the way they did that was to maintain order wherever they were appointed rulers. And they wanted a lot of the local stuff to be handled there and not get past them because it didn't look good on them. So you had all of this political situation going on and rivalries and so forth. And people, the priests and the religious Jews would do whatever they could to send evil reports to Rome to make the governors look bad. They'd complain on them and so forth. The governors and kings and so forth would do the same. So you've seen this was a big political situation also involved. And so Pilate, as he's brought before Pilate, it says, Pilate questioned him and asked Jesus, Are you the king of the Jews? Remember, he has been up all night, all through the night, and then he has been mocked and spit on and beat. So we're going to see by the following day, people always marveled. It's not a marvel if you would read the story and had some common sense. People question why Jesus was so such a short period on the cross, only about 6 hours. Many people were on the cross a half a day, a whole day, some until the next day or so. But when we see what Jesus went through from the physical standpoint in this period of 24 hours or less, it'll make a lot of sense to you. You can see why the angel had to strengthen him physically to even get to the cross. That alone, if you understand, took a miracle of God's grace to get him to finish the work of God. So he asked him a question, are you the king of the Jews? This is what the accusation is that the high priest and the council has brought before him. They've accused him of several things. Remember, they could not get any sure witnesses or anything. But mainly the deal was he claimed to be the king, the Messiah, this one. And they did not believe that. Therefore, they considered it blasphemy. And under that system, that he was to be put to death for blasphemy, and they wanted him put to death. So basically, they have tried him, they have found him guilty in their system, and now they want Pilate to give him permission to carry through with the death sentence. Before we go on, so we'll understand a little better, go to John 18. Verse 36, when he asked him, are you the king of the Jews, Jesus basically said, it is as you say, or in our language, yes, that is true. That's basically what he's saying. John again gives us more information when he asked them this and so forth. Jesus further says, verse 36, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm. This is why he told Peter to put away his sword and not defend him. He understood where Peter could not grasp what was going on. And Pilate said to him, and then Pilate said to him, so you are a king. So he's trying to get him to clarify. Because, again, he has no regard for the high priest or the Jews, and he doesn't even want to listen to this. So, again, if Pilate could find a way to spite the Jews, he would do it. So he's asking him questions under Roman law, again, to find out what's going on here. And he said, they've accused you of this. Are you claiming to be a king? And remember, other things they brought up, the other Gospels bring in some, is that he refused to pay taxes, which he didn't. Later on, they'll throw up again, to him. Well, if he's a king and you recognize him as a king, well, Caesar's the only king. And it put Pilate in a position. And so this is why Jesus is clarifying now that he is a king, but not any threat to you or to Caesar, basically. My kingdom is of another realm at the period of time he's talking about. And so this is why he explains to him. And Pilate understood he's talking religiously now. He understands that Jesus is no threat to Rome. Jesus is not going to have an insurrection like many of the Jews did and other countries and try to overthrow the Romans. So he understood immediately he's no political or military threat. He's not going to, he's not promising to overthrow the Romans or anybody. So he sees, again, there's no big deal here. And so he says this, and Pilate says, so you are a king indeed. And Jesus said, you say correctly that I am a king, for I have been born, and for this have I come into the world, to testify to the truth. And everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate basically judges himself right at this moment, because he says what to him? What is the truth? Revealing that God has not opened Pilate's eyes, and Pilate has not been able to recognize anything about Jesus or anything he's heard about him, same as the Pharisees could not. The Holy Spirit refuses to give light. He hardens the people who resist him. He hardens those in authority who fight against him, but he opens the eyes of the simple, like he said, and hides it from the wise and the intellectual if they're not willing to come his way. So he's saying, I'm coming with a religious, a spiritual message. Well, immediately Pilate's had enough of religion anyway, so he's really not interested. So he understands, though, what Jesus is saying, and he does not personally see Jesus as a threat to Rome. That's basically his evaluation. And when he had said this, he went out to the Jews and said to them, I find no guilt in this man. He's simply saying, according to Roman law, there's nothing wrong here. This is a local matter. If he's offended your religion and he's one of you, then you can beat him or do other things to punish him for causing trouble. But as far as Rome is concerned, we find no guilt in him. Nothing that's worthy of death is simply what he's saying. You know, he's probably thinking to himself, he's just a religious fanatic and y'all have a bunch of them, so why y'all so upset? You know, this would be his thoughts on the matter. And then, moving on, go back to Mark. And then the chief priests began to accuse him, Jesus, harshly. And they bring other accusations and the same ones. And then Pilate questions him again, saying, do you not answer? See how many charges they bring against you? And again, that's when Pilate went in and just talked to him on what I read and what he explained. But Jesus made no further answer, so Pilate was amazed. Remember, until he was brought under the oath, he did not answer the high priest except for the same question. He saw fit not to go any further with Pilate. And the sentence he said to him, that's all he needed to say. We have to understand, Jesus was not acting as a defense lawyer trying to find a way out. He wasn't looking to deliver himself. He was looking to do the will of the Father. And he already understood what the plan was. And again, God can use wicked men, which he did. He used the religious leaders. He's going to use Rome. He's going to use Herod. He's going to use all of them in his providence to accomplish his purpose. So he's not seeking for a way out. Therefore, he holds his peace. He could have gone into a long dissertation. He could have gave wisdom that would have confounded the high priest and all of them and Pilate. But he saw fit not to do this. That was not his intention to be released. Okay? He had another higher calling that he had to go to. And Jesus made no further answer, so Pilate was amazed. Why was he amazed? Because normal people did not want to be put to death, and they would seek any means, by hook or by crook or anything, to get set free, because they didn't want to be crucified. They understood what the Roman punishment was. And they would have done bribed, lied, done anything. And here is a man who quietly acknowledges what they accuse him of, as far as being a king, and then says nothing else. And it's almost as if this man is, and that probably confirmed to Pilate in his wickedness, oh, this is really a religious fanatic. He just wants to be martyred, you know. Oh, what can I say? You know, the world does not understand people who are serious about spiritual things. They cannot. The natural man cannot perceive spiritual things. They are foolishness to him. Wicked people cannot understand people wanting to live righteously. It's foreign to their nature. They can't believe that they're honest people. They can't believe they're moral people. They can't believe they're people that don't think and aren't as corrupt as they are. Because wicked people have no capacity to think otherwise. They are so corrupted and depraved and reprobate. So there are degrees of wickedness in people. And they have no concept that there are honest people that want to live right and want to do right in society. They have no concept of this. Further proving how depraved and reprobate people can become when the devil has his way with them. Okay, so he doesn't answer him at this time. Okay, we're going to go over to Luke because Luke fills in a lot of things. Trying to get some of the order. Luke 23, verse 4. See, verse 3, after Jesus had told him he was a king and explained his situation, and in verse 4, then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, again, I find no fault in this man. According to Roman law, I find no fault in him. Go down to verse 5. But they kept on insisting. Remember, these people are the priestly and the Jewish religious leaders and the people with them. And they began stirring up the people. And he said that Jesus is stirring up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee as far as this place, Jerusalem. And when Pilate heard, and he asked whether this man was a Galilean, and when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself was also in Jerusalem at this time. Remember, he was a king. Literally, he was a king of what they considered the Jews, which was sort of laughable. The Jewish religious leaders hated him, and he ruled a different province, basically. He didn't have control over all the areas. So you had this power struggle, basically, political situation. You had the Romans, you had Herod, and his secular, non-religious type people, mixed with the Gentiles also. Then you had the religious Jewish people, most of these priests and scribes, Jesus considered hypocrites. So you had this political structure, and they were all trying to undermine each other. They were all sending letters and messages and gossip and slander back to Rome. Again, currying for favor and trying to get what they want. And this is why they played this political game, and each one of them knew they had something to lose if they didn't play their cards right. So again, these matters they took very seriously, and no matter what each one of them did, whether it was Pilate, the high priest, or Herod, they wanted to always make themselves look good. They didn't want to be brought in trouble, because they had to answer, ultimately, to Rome for what went on. And they could be removed, any one of these. This is why Caiaphas was high priest. Some of the other priests had been removed because they offended the Romans. Actually, during, I think, Paul's time and Jesus' time, there may have been seven different high priests, and most of them were removed because they insulted Rome or did something they didn't like, so they just put another one in place. But among themselves, the Jews recognized who was the real, and it was usually kept in the families anyway. So, again, all of this politicking is going on. Pilate, evidently, and Herod did not get along very well. It's believed that Herod was a closer friend to the Caesar than even Pilate was. And so, again, you had this maneuvering going on. And it's believed Pilate was sent to Rome as almost as a punishment. It was sort of a demotion for him. And so he could not allow big trouble to happen again. When they were sent to Judea, they weren't really being favored highly. And so this was sort of understood also. And so, again, this is the political situation. Then you can understand more. What they're not looking at Jesus as anyone important. He's a pawn as far as they're concerned. But when it becomes public and there's a lot of people around, a lot of talk, remember what Rome did not want was rioting and trouble and fighting. They wanted order. They wanted everything to be kept quiet and orderly. And so that was the job of Herod. In his area, this was the job of Pilate to see that everything was orderly. And so again, they didn't want no rebellion, because then Rome would have to send soldiers and subdue them and go through all of this mess. And they knew it did not mean prosperity for the trade. Remember, Israel was right in the middle of the trade areas between Africa and parts of Asia, right up into Turkey. So this was a big trade route also. They wanted harmony. Rome knew that there had to be peace and harmony to prosper and for everything to go on as it should go. So anyway, when he hears these accusations, and he hears because of the feast, Herod's coming and is in Jerusalem, and he heard where Jesus was basically from, he decides to send him and allow Herod to question him. He is at this time, he's basically, some people believe he knows that Herod's writing letters back to the Caesar, and they're not good, and so it may be his means of trying to flatter Herod, to curry favor with him. At the same time, he'd do anything to spite the high priest, and the high priest detested Herod as much or more as they did Pilate. And so again, he sort of figured he didn't need both of them against him. So he figured, well, maybe it's better that I get over here and try to get Herod on my side. So something's going on politically here. And so when he sees this, he does not have to do this. The Roman had the final say-so. But as a favor, so again, he's trying to most likely curry favor with Herod. And this pleased Herod, you know. And remember, for a long time, Herod wanted to see Jesus. He believed, remember, to a degree that he was John the Baptist raised from the dead. And he felt very guilty over killing John the Baptist. And so again, you have all of this going on. And Herod was pleased at this friendship offer. You know, this is how he was going to see it. It probably surprised him. And so it says in verse 8, "Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time, because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him." He thought he could get him to do a miracle, or, you know, this is what he was after. He was sadly disappointed. He had heard of much of the miracles and things that Jesus had did, so I guess he just assumed, well, he can just do one in front of me. And if he pleases me and performs for me, maybe I'll speak for him. That's basically what he's thinking. And he wants to find out, too, probably, if he thinks it's John the Baptist. And so he questions him at length, but he answers him nothing. Isn't it interesting? In all three cases, he only answers what he has to, but with Herod, he does not speak a word. He does not recognize Herod as being a true king of a bloodline. He does not recognize much about Herod, other than being an authority. But evidently, he was not required by the law to answer him, and he does not answer Herod. And Herod, of the three, was probably the most brutal and the most devious and so forth. But again, so if Jesus was seeking to get himself free, this was the one he needed to talk to and get his influence. But again, he answers nothing. In this case, as far as we know, he doesn't say anything to Herod. And the chief priests and the scribes, see, they've sent, the priest has sent his other priests and leaders, taken Jesus over to where Pilate and the area where Herod is staying. And they're going to explain their cause the same as they did to Pilate, and they're going to try to persuade Herod to side with them in this matter. So this is what they're after. So they're trying the same game. And they were standing there accusing him of all of these crimes. And can you imagine when they brought up that he says he's king of the Jews? Herod could have taken that personally. And again, remember, he didn't need no one thinking they're going to replace him. And Herod was a very superstitious person. The chief and the scribes doing this, and Herod with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, they dressed him in a gorgeous robe, most likely purple, and they sent him back to Pilate. Notice the response from Herod. Now, in this case, we have no direct word that the high priest himself, which he could have, slapped Jesus. He had the other ones in the council did. We have no recorded instance of Pilate himself striking. But here it implies that Herod mixed in there with the soldiers, that he was of low character. He was a low life. I guess that's the way we could say. It didn't matter what power he had. He would do what normal kings would not do. It was beneath their dignity to get in there and mock and slap. And we see the gospel say they put a crown on his head. They blindfolded him. They tried to get him to prophesy. And remember, the Jews tried to do the same. And he was trying to provoke him. If he really believed, which shows you Herod must not have, he was afraid of John the Baptist. He was not afraid of Jesus. See, shows you that he was totally blinded, that his eyes were not open to any degree. John the Baptist stirred him up, and he was afraid of him, knowing he was a righteous man. And he actually was tricked by his wife into putting John the Baptist to death. You know, and he did not want to do this. But he doesn't know much about Jesus, only that Jesus once sent him a reply, which he took as an insult. And he was warned by Herod's men to sort of stay out of his area and so forth, and Jesus sent a message back saying, go tell that old fox. that I will do my cures and miracles and so forth. And he called him an old fox, which simply meant, I know what you are. We would say today, you know, we know how devious is. And he knew that he sent the message. So see, again, Herod did not want him in his area, did not want trouble going on. Again, it looked bad on him. And Jesus yet was going to go to all of the areas he was told to go to. And he was simply telling Herod, you can't do much really yet, but the time will come when you might. Well, this is the time. So again, he never performed a miracle for Herod. He did not impress Herod. There was nothing about him. He disturbed Pilate a little bit, but he did not do this. It shows you that Herod was probably further reprobated, further demonized, and had no sense of dignity or honor or anything. Well, notice what he was married to. And I'm sure when he had John the Baptist killed, a few more demons entered him. He became further hardened by God, as Saul did, as Ahab did, as they progressed in their sins. Their hardness and iniquity was in them to a deeper level. So again, they mock him. This is the second time, basically, he's been beaten and slapped. So remember, this has gone on. He has not slept all night long. This, both of what was done, was not done to normal people who were going to be crucified. You know, this was not a long process. It was done quickly. Then they were crucified. Some would stay on the cross for hours, some for a couple of days, until they expired. And again, we will see that Jesus most likely was on the cross about 6 hours. And we will see what happened during this time. And Herod with his soldiers, again, they showed contempt and mocking. All of them mocked him. They mocked him. How did they do? They put a robe on him and bowed to him and said, "You're king." See, that claim was he's king of the Jews. And so here we have this king mocking him and saying, "Oh, yeah, let's honor you." You know, so this is all they were doing. And notice verse 12. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day, for before they had been enemies with each other. So this was a smart move on Pilate's part. Now at least he had Herod on his side against the Jews, the high priest and those leaders. He didn't feel, and he knew Herod had greater influence with the Caesar than he did. So he was a good person to make your friend, and he was a bad person to be your enemy. And so Pilate came out a little ahead on this, as far as politically. And this is why we see later he mocks the Jewish leaders further. He feels freer. He has more political power to say and do things. But even that he recognized has a limit. And so again, they come together as enemies. Usually this is the case when it comes against truth. The devil always stirs up enemies and wicked people to gather in force if he can. Okay, go back to Mark 15, verse 6 and 7. Now at the feast, he used to release for them any one prisoner whom they requested. Every year, it was the Roman custom for the governor that they would take a prisoner and allow the people to decide as a favor to them who they wanted to be released. And this was what they expected to happen. And the man named Barabbas had been imprisoned with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the insurrection. There had been some kind of rioting and so forth. And in the process, evidently some Roman or some citizen was killed. And he was being the ringleader, was captured. And most likely he would have been tried and found guilty and sentenced to be crucified, if not already, in the process. And so he was popular with the people. He was he would be like one of the Palestinian bombers, those type of terrorists. They'd think he was a hero, you know. So basically, they were going to gather together, and the high priest, and they were going to all decide who's the best one to our advantage. They didn't care about no common criminal, but this was someone who was trying to overthrow Rome. This is someone who's helping our cause. And so they were trying to get him, and he was the one that decided they wanted to get released. So while this is going on, Pilate is sitting out on a porch type area, and he's listening to this debate back and forth. He's gone in and out to talk to Jesus. In the process, he's taken a break for a few hours. He sent Jesus off to Herod. And then he comes back, and he comes back out and sits in his chair, and he lets the Jewish leaders start their arguments again, and he hears his report from Herod. So this is basically what's going on. So when it comes to this issue of Barabbas, now they're trying to decide, the people have already been told who to release. Well, right while this is coming up, Pilate's wife comes to him. This is over in Matthew chapter 27. Trying to piece together some of these events. Matthew 27:19. And while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent him a message, saying, "Have nothing to do with this righteous man." Isn't it interesting? Pilate has said in his first judgment, what? "I find no guilt in this man." He's basically saying he's just according to law. He's done nothing against the Romans, you know. And the wife, it's interesting. Notice what she says. "Have nothing to do with this righteous man, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him." Isn't it interesting that God even warns leaders? Pilate's getting a warning here. He already has evaluated Jesus, and his own conscience and his understanding of the law have said he is not guilty. But we'll see he didn't stay with this. That's what he believed in his heart. And Rome prided itself on its justice for everybody. And we'll see the hypocrisy here. And so he basically says, you know, according to Roman law, he's done nothing. Now, you can take him and beat him if you think he stirred up trouble, but he cannot be put to death. He is not worthy to be put to death. It's basically what he's saying to him. And now his wife comes. And evidently, she would not have bothered to send him any message, but evidently, she knew something. And notice what's happened. She is most likely warned by the Lord in a dream. The Lord did this. Remember, Jesus warned Peter and the disciples to watch and pray, even though he foresaw they did not. He did not intervene with his warning. He did not stop. He didn't say, "Well, it's going to happen anyway." He don't look at things that way. God, remember, Job says he speaks to a soul while they sleep, once or twice in a dream, in a vision of the night, to warn men and keep them from the pit. Remember, many times kings and pharaohs were warned in dreams not to harass the prophets or Abraham and so forth. That was God's method at times, even to prophets, was to speak in dreams and visions. So she had been given something disturbing in a dream, and it was from the Lord. And it was simply, whatever it was, she was given that this is a righteous man and that your husband ought to be careful how he handles him. So in a sense, he was warned. And she gives him this message, you know, that he is a righteous man. And remember, he has already said, what? "I have found no guilt in him." Basically, her message is confirming your sentence, you know. And he knows this in his heart. Like many people sometimes know the truth, but when it comes to acting on the truth, they cannot. But we see the same thing happened with Peter. His spirit was willing. But when the trial came, his humanity was not prepared, and therefore he was defeated. So his willing. So right even now, we can say Pilate was willing to let him go. But notice, it's starting to work against him. The devil's already sent Herod along to be his friend. Politics have entered again, and they're overriding and Pilate's looking at what? What's the best situation to have me coming out like a rose, smelling like a rose? That's what I have to watch out for. My life may count on how these reports go back. And so, justice or no justice, I got to look out for number one. So this is what has happened. But he has been warned. And again, this was from the Lord warning him. This is a righteous man. And you have already said there you found no guilt in him. Remember this, Pilate. You know. So again, God does not leave himself without witness. Okay, go back to Mark 15. Verse 8. And the crowd went up and began asking him to do as he had been accustomed to do for them, again releasing a prisoner. And Pilate answered them, saying, "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" Now you have to understand now, he has heard that Pilate, I mean, that Herod has mocked and arrayed Jesus as a king in contempt and mockery. And because he's made friends with him, Pilate's sort of going along with this. So when he says this, he does not necessarily believe, he most certainly doesn't believe that Jesus is a king. He believes he's a religious fanatic is what he believes. But he's mocking the religious leaders, knowing it upsets them and disturbs them. And this is why he does it. He's probably thinking, oh, now it's me and Herod's time to provoke the religious leaders as they do us. And so notice what he says. What shall I do with him whom you call the king of the Jews? And again, verse 10, he was aware that the chief priests had handed him over because of envy. They envied Jesus. What did they envy? That the people believed and the people recognized that he was a man of God, and the people saw them as being hypocrites, and they didn't like this. And so this is why they turned him over. Money, covetousness, envy, and because their father was the devil, as Jesus said, they had a murdering spirit. But the chief priests stirred up the crowds to ask him to release Barabbas for them instead. And answering again, Pilate said to them, then what shall I do with him whom you call the king of the Jews? Notice the people there and Herod, they didn't call him the king of the Jews. That's why they wanted him put to death. He again is mocking them by saying this. What shall I do with your king? You know, and he knows what he's doing. You know, Herod has mocked him, and he's mocking him to the people. But he's just using Jesus again as a pawn. Jesus isn't that much interest to him, really. But he sees him as an opportunity to insult the Jewish leaders. And he's dragging this thing out to provoke the Jews. This is what his intent is. He knows what he can do and what he can't do. So he's basically letting the Jewish leaders know that he has the last word, that Rome has the last word, no matter what they say. And so he's dragging this out, you know, to get understand who has the power here. And they've probably already gotten the message through their spies that Herod and Pilate are friends now. And that'll provoke them more. So you can see again, politics is heavily involved here. And the people, under the inspiration of the priest and so forth, say what? Crucify him. You know, go ahead and kill him like we've asked you to do. We do not recognize him as being a king. We recognize him as a false prophet and someone who stirs up the people, and in their hypocrisy, someone who does not honor Caesar. Well, they hated Caesar. They were such hypocrites, you know. So again, they're using this to remind Pilate. One of the Gospels, and this is when Pilate understands what he has to do, it didn't matter what he wanted to do. They threw up to his face and said, you know, if you don't do this, you're not Caesar's friend. That you're recognizing someone who claims to be a king. So see, again, they all know how to play this game, and they're taking advantage of this in their arrogance and pride, how they can insult one another and do these verbal abuses. But all in all, everybody's basically going to get what they want out of this, because again, they don't recognize Jesus of being anyone of great importance. Sadly deceived. And so they said, crucify him. But Pilate again reminds them what? And he said to them, why, what evil has he done? He's already said what? I found no guilt in him. I've not changed my mind on my examining of him. I sent him to Herod. Herod's done nothing worthy of death to him. He's mocked him and beat him. You know, well, you priests did that. You know, they considered that sufficient simply for stirring up trouble and causing us to get up early and have to do these things. You know, that alone, they would have considered him a troublemaker. He troubled us. He inconvenienced our sleep. And he's stirring up all the, he's nothing wrong, it was normal to do this. And so he says, well, what shall I find no guilt in the man? I do not find him worthy to be put to death, and yet you are asking for this. But they shouted all the more, crucify him. Matthew 27. Matthew 27, 24 and 25. And when Pilate saw he was accomplishing nothing, but rather that a riot was starting, See, this is the thing he didn't want to happen. And the Jews' leaders knew this. They could get them to throw into a riot. This would report it back to Rome. So he wasn't going to let this get out of hand. Didn't matter what he personally thought about Jesus being innocent or not innocent. He said, but rather the riot was started, he took water and he washed his hands in front of the crowd saying, I am innocent of this man's blood. See to that yourself. What was he saying? I told you, according to Roman law, I find no guilt worthy of death, but I have the power to turn him over to y'all to do as you please if it means rioting and so forth. Who is this insignificant person? You know, he wasn't a Roman citizen. He couldn't appeal to Rome like Paul could. So he was sitting there looking at the situation, and if it had gotten back to the Caesar, Rome may have said, well, why would you care about this little man? You should have let them go kill him, and you let this one nobody stir up trouble and riot him. How much further are we going to send you if you can't maintain order? See, that's what Pilate's thinking. So the Jews stirring up the people to this frenzy state, they knew that Pilate would have to give in. And again, they are playing this game with each other. But notice the words here and what the people say, because it's going to come back to them. God's listening. And all the people said, his blood shall be on us and on our children. Pilate's saying, I washed my hands. I told you he's innocent. But I'm going to turn him over to you as the mass of people and your religious leaders, and he's one of y'all's. So therefore, I transfer him to you to do what you want. But it's really not my purpose or will, but just to gratify you, you know. But I'm cleansed, you know, I'm just, he thought he was. No, because he really hadn't done true justice. He was looking out for himself. And the people said, let his blood be on us and our children. And it's interesting, God heard their words, and he fulfilled their words. And we will see prophecy fulfilled what they did. Okay, let's take a break here.